to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here today. It is Saturday, time for our end of the week look back at all the craziness that's been going on here, courtesy of the United States government, the sweetest smelling government in the world. And what we have here today, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. And before we get into that, though, Matt is in our control room. He's twiddling the dials, keeping us out of trouble. His hand hovering over that telephone. The number, as always, 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. The webcam is running. The chat room is open. All systems are go, and we are ready to rock and roll here today. Now, before we get into the news here, I'm just taking a real quick look. Apparently, the Hubble Space Telescope, and this is very good demonstration of why it should not be retired and deorbited anytime soon. If nothing else, just turn it over to some university to run the thing. It's not in anybody's way up there. But they swung it around there, and they took a photograph of this impact feature on the planet Jupiter. And taking a look at this and being very familiar with the aftermath of the Shoemaker-Levy 9 impact on Jupiter, which I sort of associate with my getting engaged to Claire here. But that's a very large mark, and whatever caused that impact was much larger and more intense than Shoemaker-Levy 9. So there's a lot of stuff out there flying around in the solar system. If you take a look at it, there is a link to it at whatreallyhappened.com, and you can take a look at that. A lot of stuff going on out there in the universe. Now, on the news break, you probably heard the story about how they're declaring the recession to be over because the stock market is gone up hundreds and hundreds of points, you know, over the last week here. And this is a trick that goes back to the Clinton administration when their whole campaign slogan was, "It's the economy, stupid," and they were running up the stock market using the plunge protection team. Back then, it wasn't really known that the government was covertly intervening in the stock market. John Crudell, investigative reporter out of New York, basically blew the whistle on that one and brought to light the fact that there was, in fact, a government working group, President's Working Group on Financial Markets is their official title, and they were intervening in the markets to prevent any corrections, to basically crush the shorts. This was not always good news when the market did not go down when the technical analysts said it was supposed to go down. But this was the big political banner that Bill Clinton was waving at everybody to prove what a really good president he was, and he had this huge budget surplus to spend, which we found out afterwards was money looted from Social Security, which is why the Social Security Trust Fund is in such serious trouble right now. So we're back here where Barack Obama appears to be playing basically the same game. Everyone is declaring the recession is over. Up in Canada, they're saying the recession is over, even though unemployment continues to skyrocket. Why is the recession over? Well, because the currency is looking so good. And it betrays this attitude that the health of the economy is based on the health of the money, not necessarily on how well the people themselves are actually doing. Now, I'm kind of old school. To me, the country isn't the money, and it isn't the government. It is the people. In the case of the United States, 300 million Americans. Is their life improving right now? Is their standard of living increasing? Do they have financial security? If they don't, then I don't care what kind of numbers you're getting out of the stock market and the Federal Reserve and the Wall Street bonuses, the economy as a whole is not improving. Not until ordinary, everyday people have better lives. Then you can point to that and say, yes, the system is working, the economy is coming back, I, as the government, am taking care of the people because that is my job. Governments are not elected to take care of the banks, in theory. Governments are elected to take care of the people. Now, getting back to this report about how the stock market has been run up rather significantly over the last week, what we are seeing here is even the corporate mainstream media is having to deal with this high-frequency program trading. And Goldman Sachs is right at the heart of it. We saw that that article in Rolling Stone about how Goldman Sachs is behind all of these major bubbles from which they profit handsomely at the expense of the American people. And now, of course, they're caught up in this high-frequency program trading where they're literally, they've created a system where the person with the fastest computers is going to make the most money. And it's literally taking it away from other brokerages. They're taking it away from their own clients. They're taking it away from the companies that are being publicly traded. They're putting absolutely nothing back. And yet they're declaring huge profitability, and they're manipulating the stocks. They're able to manipulate the stocks using this software. That came out when the FBI arrested one of Goldman Sachs' programmers, who had put a copy of the software on a web server in Germany. They're assuring us that it, the software is secure and it never went anywhere from there, but you really can't know. You really can't know. And the bottom line is, it's becoming obvious that Goldman Sachs' miraculous profitability, so soon after needing billions of dollars of taxpayer bailout money, it's becoming very obvious that their profitability is coming from scamming the system with these high-speed program trading systems, which were, back in the 1980s, banned because of the destructive influence they had on the stock market. And in this last 10 years, when deregulation hit, and, oh, let's go back and do program trading, this is where Goldman Sachs' $100 million a day profitability is coming from. They're looting it from the stock market. It's apparently legal under the rules the U.S. government has made up in the last few years, but it doesn't necessarily make it right. I get emails saying, you know, why are you pounding on Goldman Sachs? What they're doing is perfectly legal. So, yeah, everything Adolf Hitler did was perfectly legal. Didn't mean it was the right thing to be doing. Didn't mean it was the right thing for the health of the country as a whole. And rather interestingly enough, we saw this video, I've got it linked to whatreallyhappened.com, called The Greed Game. It's a documentary about the British economy, how there is a core of fabulously wealthy people becoming even more fabulously wealthy, but it's at the expense of everybody around them. Because if there's only a finite amount of money available in a society, and only a finite amount of money coming into the society, the rich have to get richer at the expense of the poorer. And they will game the system to do that. They will spend $1 billion of their money to lobby the government and to run advertising and pay for propaganda in the media in order to get $5 billion in money flowing their way down the road. That's just the nature of the ultra-rich. Even though they have more money than they could ever possibly spend personally, their vanity and their ego require them to go out and grab more. And it will always be the expense of everybody else around them. Why are they doing this? Well, there was this economic whiz kid by the name of Adam Smith. And he proposed this rather odd idea that if everybody was just being personally greedy and out for themselves, that as a side effect of that, our society as a whole would move forward and progress. That was one of his basic tenets of philosophy when he was talking about the economy. And this was a wonderful, wonderful idea for greedy people, because all of a sudden it was okay to be personally greedy. The Gordon Gekko kind of mentality. Greed is good. It's okay for me to be ripping billions of dollars out of looted companies, because in the larger scheme of things, I'm helping the society move forward. It was a very gross self-deception. And John Nash proved that Adam Smith was completely wrong. And now, obviously, as we look around at the wreckage of our economic might, we can see that John Nash was right and Adam Smith was wrong. We are suffering the effects of a generation of corporate leaders who had a complete disdain for the products they're manufacturing, who only wanted to get into the game to get a couple of chips to go to that big open-air casino on Wall Street, and who's just said, greed is good. The richer I am, the better the world is. And it doesn't work that way, because we've given up this idea of making products to make money, and we've made money the product. And when you make money the product, and you're just gaming the system to bring more money to yourself, it's coming out of other people's lives. It's coming out of other people's mouths. And that's exactly what we're seeing here with this Goldman Sachs program trading situation. So this high soaring down number doesn't represent a sudden burst of renewed productivity in American industry. It is simply these market forces generated by these high frequency program trades that are driving these indicator issues upward. It's a classic bump and dump is what's going on. We can't trust those numbers as being meaningful. We can't even trust the volume as being meaningful, since 70% of that market volume is coming out of these computers at Goldman Sachs. So we don't really know from the numbers what the market is doing. A lot of people are concerned that the bottom is still ready to drop out. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy. The phone lines are still open, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room, ready to answer the phone when you call in here. Now, we're talking about the economy, and looking over at Great Britain, and like I said, oh, my goodness, there's a caller right now. Dennis? Aloha, Dennis. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey there. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
Listen to it a lot all week. Good stuff. The found a video, Money as Debt.
Oh, yeah,
Google
that's a
video.
Good one. Mm-hmm.
And you can download it as an MP4. So I just wanted to push that.
I've got it on my iPhone. I'll show it to people. You know, we're on an airplane or something. I'm sitting, the person next to me said, do you understand how many were? Here, take my iPhone. Watch this movie. It's better than the in-flight Pauly Shore films or whatever.
It's only 47 minutes, too.
Yeah, it is. It's a great, great illustration, and really to see the look of shock on people's face when they look at it, because we're all raised to think that money is money, this is value, and we buy and we earn it, we spend it, and don't understand what a complete fraud it is. And again, looking back at the when the Founding Fathers set up the United States of America, and the reason they had the Treasury issuing the money, which at that point was a very revolutionary approach to a new country. And it was they did it as a backlash to the enforcement of the Currency Act by King George III, which was trying to enslave us to the Bank of England, the same way the British people were enslaved to the Bank of England. And the bankers of Europe have been trying for the last 200 years to basically erase this idea that government should be allowed to issue its own money, because this is such a dangerous threat to them. And this is why when Lincoln issued his greenbacks, the European bankers backed the Confederacy. We know that just 5 months after John F. Kennedy tried to issue the U.S. notes, actually he did issue the U.S. notes with Executive Order 11110. 5 months later, he was dead, and I have a lot of people saying, oh, come on, it's got nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. Okay, but one of the Warren Commission members was John J. McCloy, the former president of the World Bank, former president of the Chase Manhattan Bank. Why is a banker on the Warren Commission if there is no link between the assassination and the financial systems of the United States of America?
Follow the money.
Yes, follow the money. And right now, obviously, the Federal Reserve is terrified that we want to follow the money because it's our money we've been paying into the Federal Reserve. I mean, since Vietnam, we, the American people, have overpaid the national debt by about 16 times, but because we're always only paying only the interest, the principal never goes down. And this is by the will of the Congress, who get huge financial contributions from the banking lobbies, and we are kept in a permanent state of indentured servitude to this privately owned bank, most of whose owners are not American.
Right.
So it's time to bring it to an end, and I applaud Ron Paul and all those who support him for audit the Fed. I think we're past the point of an audit. I think it is time to recognize that the Federal Reserve is not working in the national interest. It is time to end it. It is time to revoke its charter. It's been done twice before in American history where we revoke a central bank's charter and we say, okay, the Treasury has to issue the money. Barack Obama could save our economy overnight.
Yep.
Just by invoking his constitutional authority, or Kennedy's never-repealed Executive Order 11110, call up the Treasury and say, start issuing the money, start printing up our own money. That's what the people are going to use, free from interest and debt, and we'll turn this economy around. And it's worked every time it's been done before.
Yeah.
And, of course, then Barack Obama's going to have to worry about a crazed loan nut assassin, registered trademark Federal Reserve. You know, that's what we need. It's the only thing that's going to save this country, in my opinion.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Richard C. Cook's work, and he's a Treasury analyst for 22 years, and his work on globalresearch.ca was incredibly detailed. You get a headache reading it, but his book out codifies that work. It's much, you know, simpler to read, and he's got the practical answer. So we just need political will. We need a push. You know, and
it's got to come from
I'm
the
bummed
people.
Out because I write the guy, and he writes me right back a lot of times immediately, and I go, I wish you were busier so you couldn't do this.
Well,
nicest
you know,
guy in the world.
I understand that the push is going to have to come from the people, and I think it's building, and I think that's the reason they're doing this whole FEMA thing next week, because that's got nothing to do with anti-terror. It is a demonstration of power by the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to send a message to the American people saying, don't you start complaining about all these increase in taxes, and don't you start complaining about all these wars, and don't you start doing things that we don't approve of, because we're able to put soldiers in the streets of America to kill you if you get out of line. That is what next week's demonstration is all about.
Naomi Wolf calls it the chilling factor.
Well, actually, it's pissing me off, so I don't think that's going to work.
Yep.
Okay, anything else, Dennis?
I talk to the average person, and they know something's up. You know, you can always slip something into just about everybody.
Well, absolutely. And the more you speak out, the more you're going to help other people to speak out. And if we all start speaking out and we start realizing that we all understand the same thing, that our government is totally out of control, that we've lost our way as a nation, that we are as bad as the Nazis were in terms of concentration camps and torture and targeting an ethnic minority to try and blame all the problems on. It's the same thing all over. And wonder weapons, billions and billions of dollars spent on wonder weapons. It's nonsense. We're going right down that same path that Adolf Hitler did, and it's going to end exactly the same way, with the destruction of our country. I don't like that. I'm trying to stop it. I hope I can count on your help. Dennis, thank you very much.
We could go Wednesday. I ran into the mayor of Lansing, and he wants to start he wants to push for a state bank like North Dakota.
Oh, that would be a great savior for the state. Schwarzenegger should do that in California.
Yeah.
But he's too tied in with the national financial system because of his support from Ken Lay and all those connections. We should do that here in Hawaii. I've already been in contact with the governor's office. They're sort of giving me a cool disinterest, but I'm saying you got to start planning now.
Well, I was joking with the mayor. I said, do you have any aspirations to go higher politically? And he's like, no. And I said, well, you know, we don't want you to end up, you know, a two-to-the-head suicide, and he's laughing.
He knows.
The beast. He went to D.C. and pitched for the car companies, and his YouTube videos are really passionate videos, kind of like Alex Jonesy-like passion. They really are. He gets really pissed off. And
well, you know, nothing great is ever accomplished without passion, we as a nation, we the people, we have to get passionate. You know, we have to stop drinking all this tranquilized water and stuff and get angry. It is time to get angry, I'm afraid. It really, really is. And as we said before earlier, if there's going to be a push to get rid of the Federal Reserve and return us to a sound monetary policy, such as this nation was started with originally, the push has to come from the people, because the politicians are all bought. And this scandal in New Jersey just illustrates it. It's the system is rotten all the way from the top, all the way to the bottom. This corrupting influence is coming from outside and totally destroyed this nation from within. We never had to fear for invasion from without. It was subversion from within. And I remember when I was a kid, they always just say, watch out for those commies. The commies are coming to subvert us. We were looking in the wrong direction. The threat was from Israel. Thanks a lot, Dennis. We got to let you go. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, more phone calls, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza. pizza tonight.
And Aloha America, welcome back to our show here. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about, we're talking about a lot of stuff here. The phone lines are open, 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room and he's feeling lonely, so you might want to give him a call and tell him happy Saturday and all the rest of that other stuff. All right, over in Great Britain, their gross domestic product is taking a major dump. This is unfortunately an embarrassment for the government that they were forecasting a turnaround. Things were going to be great and things were going to go up, and it just went into another decline, which, you know, either they're being caught lying or they're caught just not knowing what they're doing. Harry Truman used to say if you took all the economists in the world and laid them end to end, they'd still be pointing in different directions, and it does seem like that is definitely the case. I mean, if you think about the economy, it is intentionally obfuscated in order to conceal operations that are designed to extract wealth without necessarily giving much of anything back for it, and trying to find your way through how the system works. You know, it's a vast state machine, and in a way, it another way of looking at the economy, it almost operates like a computer, a very vast planetary scale computer, where the money is the bits of data flowing around, and all the banks and all the regulatory rules and economic systems are the logic gates that are attempting to get that flow to shift certain ways in response to certain other stimuli. And when you take something that complex on a planetary scale, it's going to have some very unpredictable behavior. And I think one of the problems with globalism is that governments are going to be even less able to predict and control what this system is doing. Now, we were talking about this high-frequency program trading, and it occurred to me the other night, you know, remember back in the 1950s and 1960s where all these science fiction movies about how computers were going to take over the world one day? It was like Colossus, the Forbin Project. And, of course, HAL 9000 deciding to blow the astronauts out of the airlock on the Discovery in 2001. And this computerized high-frequency program trading on Wall Street literally is handing the economy of our nation over to computers. Forget about handing it over to the Federal Reserve. Forget about handing it over to whatever. These computers, operating as fast as they are operating, are influencing the economy beyond human ability to keep up and understand, let alone interfere with. And these computers, you know, when you look at iRobot and Isaac Asimov's idea that robots were going to eventually revolt against humans because it was the inevitable outcome of being told to take care of humans and protect them, in this case, we don't even have that kind of a wrinkle. These computers are programmed to find ways to take money away from other people and give it to the owners of the computers, and they are doing that job masterfully. And there is no reason for the bank owners and for the brokerages that own these computers to surrender doing this. They're going to go on doing it until the system literally runs out of money and breaks down. So the pressure to say we need to return the human economy to the control of humans, again, that has to come from the American people. We're going to go back to the phones. Danny in Texas. Aloha, Danny. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Oh, Michael, just want to say that you're my favorite guy on GCN, and I really enjoy your show. I just have a question that I can't seem to get to with anybody, actually. I get cut off one way or another before I get it out.
Okay. I've got my hand over the button. I'm just warning you right now. all right, what's on your mind?
This. You know, we seem to have the knowledge and the idea that these people that are doing these things are breaking the law.
Which people, back up a second, which people doing what thing and what laws are they breaking? I know you know what you mean. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know. I should be more specific about that. Oh, well, for one thing, a lot of the laws that are being introduced in Congress right now go directly against what our Constitution says. You know,
no question there.
And also, a lot of the things that Obama is pushing for go directly against the Constitution and legality of that. And you know, it looks like if he puts his name on one of those laws that they push through, then they're all guilty. But on delving a little bit deeper, I think it's a pretty generally accepted idea among the truth people that the Bilderbergers and, you know, these rich bankers and stuff are a whole lot behind or totally behind the takeover of world government and eugenics and what have you. And my question is, are they all just hedged off, or is there no way to bring them to justice? Is there no way to file a lawsuit or actually swear out a complaint and put them in jail and make them face a trial?
Unfortunately, at this point, no. The entire system is corrupted. The laws are only being enforced against, you know, the lower classes. We are seeing continually, Bernie Madoff was doing what he did for 12 years before the circumstances finally forced him to be brought to justice. We're finding out this rabbi who was involved in this black market organ transplant ring, he's been doing that for 10 years. It really is. It is a corrupt society. And I think we are past the point where we can expect to find anybody within the system that's going to do anything to correct it, because the system works for them. It makes them rich. It gives them lives of privilege and power. And they, you know, the problem with political power is it's going to attract the very people who shouldn't have it. And working together with that is you need to understand that the moral and the immoral are mutually exclusive societies. Neither one really wants to tolerate the presence of the other. And just as you'll have a group of moral people who will shun and eject somebody who's not very moral at all, so too when you have a society that has become totally immoral, they work to exclude the moral. And a classic case example of that would be last year's presidential campaign, where Ron Paul the entire political establishment of both parties was united to make sure that Ron Paul got nowhere near the center of power.
Exactly. Yeah, no doubt.
So we're headed for a crash, and I don't like it, but I can't see any way to avoid it.
Yeah, and the only reason I offered that up, I don't want a shooting war, and that's the only answer to a shooting war, which I think is going to happen. And indeed, I think they want it to happen so they can crush us with NORTHCOM or whatever, but I'm not sure that it's going to be as simple as they think it is, because we have the numbers.
Well, I don't think it's going to be as simple as they think it is either, and I think they're worried about the fact that they couldn't win an open warfare, and again, that's why I think they're doing this whole exercise next week with FEMA and Homeland Security and all these troops brought in from foreign countries. It is a demonstration of power. It's got nothing to do with terrorism. It is a demonstration of power. The U.S. government is going to show America that, yes, we can put foreign troops on the street who will not hesitate to kill you if we tell them to do it. And by the way, this is the same mistake that got Charles I in trouble.
Yeah,
so,
just how wrong is that? I mean, I was listening to a deal here the other day that said that I think it was Obama that wants to resurrect, actually reading about it, that he wanted to resurrect an old passage of law or whatever that was never, I think it was an executive order that was never ratified by Congress, to let Mexico decide whether we had criminals trespassing in arms or actually criminal selling of arms to his country, and allow them to come in and snatch the people that are doing it and prosecute them. And how wrong is that? I mean, coming in our borders, you know?
Well, it's part of that whole globalist agenda that somehow the world is going to be a lot better with the biggest crooks of all sitting on top of the entire planet. And of course, I'm very much opposed to a one world government. I'm opposed to this New World Order thing.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, you know, what happens when the next Hitler or George Bush becomes leader of the entire world?
Oh my God.
And,
yeah.
You know, social evolution is going to stop. Every time I hear the phrase global government, I remember that's what Alexander the Great wanted. That's what Napoleon wanted. That's what Hitler wanted. And it didn't work out well for the common people of the time. All right. Danny, we got to let you go here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Steve and Todd waiting on the phones. We're going to get to you gentlemen here. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero, and we will be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
no matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got callers on the line. We're going to go to Steve in Canada. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this morning?
Good day, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. Just curious, since you do talk about technology and the technocrats a certain amount, have you seen the movie Eagle Eye with Billy Bob Thornton and Shia LaBeouf, I think his name is, the kid from Transformers?
No, I haven't. I've seen it on the guide. I'm probably going to try and catch it this weekend.
You got to watch it, man. Got to watch it. Not only is it a great Hollywood film, but, man, does it wake you up to what the technology is capable of probably even right now. And considering, you know, a lot of people say that the technology that we know about is probably about 20 to 50 years behind what they actually have out there. This movie is scary, but I think it's a great opportunity to tell people to watch something that they're going to not only enjoy. It's a mainstream Hollywood movie, but maybe wake them up to what is potential with the RFID chips and other tracking mechanisms and surveillance cameras and so on. It's pretty intense. So definitely watch it.
Well, I definitely make a point of catching it. I've been seeing it here and there, and I definitely want to take a look at that.
Yeah.
Now, as far as technology is concerned, I'm one of those people where I think all technology is inherently good, only the uses certain humans put it to are evil. And so I'm not a Luddite,
right.
And I'm not throwing my wooden shoes into the power looms to try and break them or anything like that. But the problem with some of these high-powered computer systems is they are human magnifiers, and they can magnify the good that people do, and as we are seeing at Goldman Sachs, they can magnify the evil that people do.
Yep.
And, you know, the right now, we've reached a stage in our economy where the money is not flowing to the most productive people. It is flowing toward those with the most powerful technology to loot and steal. And there doesn't seem to be anybody in our government that's at all concerned with this situation here.
It's shocking. And, I mean, I live in Canada here, and I happen to live in the technology triangle of Canada, and Kitchener-Waterloo, Guelph area where RIM is with the BlackBerry, and just our technology area here is phenomenal. And on one side, I understand where technology can take us and where it might take us, you know, and the worrisome part of that potentially. But on the other hand, it keeps our economy going. We haven't been hit by the recession as hard. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, get your opinion on, I mean, I've listened to Bob Chapman and a few other economists on GCN talking about possibly, the potential for a bank holiday in the fall here, like end of September and so on. Do you think that this whole thing with the swine flu and the hysteria that they're hyping up would give them the perfect opportunity to not only, I mean, they're already in England talking about potentially shutting down schools and other open areas for the public to prevent the spread of the swine flu. Do you think if they get this hyped up enough and enough cases pop up, this would be the great cover to cover up their banking holiday?
I think that the hysteria, the manufactured hysteria over the swine flu, is an attempt to give the people something to worry about. That seems immediately dire threatening so that we're not paying attention to what's going on with the economy. It's very much a case, it's a classic case of magician's misdirection. I don't think the swine flu is a depopulation program because remember, those people building the pyramids don't want to haul those rocks up there themselves. They need the working class people. And, you know, when anybody talks about depopulation, it's always supposed to be done to somebody else's country. If there were a depopulation operation going on with the swine flu, then the vaccine that's being handed out is really a vaccine that they want to get all Americans filled with before they release the germs on the rest of the world, in accord with National Security Study 200. The reason I don't want the vaccine is because of what happened in 1976 when they simply screwed it up and the vaccine was killing more people than the flu was.
Yeah.
But I really think that the hysteria, I mean, our government lives by manufacturing a crisis to which they will then sell us the solution.
That's right.
Terrorism crisis, the global warming crisis, now it's the swine flu crisis. And obviously the numbers of actual infected and dead don't justify the hysteria. It is being used as a distraction so that we're not paying attention to the program trading, to the fact that the economy is definitely heading towards some kind of a crash either next month or in September.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it. Great show as always.
Thank you very much, Steve. And we're going to switch over to Todd in Ohio. Aloha, Todd. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hello, Mike. I just wanted to draw your attention to something that I emailed you about recently, but I don't know if you got it. I know you get a lot of emails, but it's a thread that I created. I can give you the title for it. It's very easy to find on Google. If you go to Google and you type in "a liberal elitist candidly reveals his true eugenicist colors."
I remember seeing that one. Yes.
And it's a article that I found in a this will probably be amusing to some of your listeners, but it was a June 1969 issue of Playboy magazine. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, it was an article or an interview with Gore Vidal, and the reason and in which he talks very candidly about his pro-eugenics views. And the reason I thought that was relevant is because of the recent story about Obama's science czar and how he wrote that book 30 years ago. You know, basically calling for eugenics, but the reason I thought that was relevant is because, you know, Vidal he's still held in very high esteem by the establishment left to this day.
Here's where it comes down to. The whole eugenics movement dates back, and let me back up even further than that. We have all these different groups on planet Earth who have decided they are the very best that evolution or the gods can produce, and therefore they have a natural right to limit the undesirables. And we have seen that throughout history. The Old Testament is filled with that. You know, we're God's chosen, therefore we have a right to go and slaughter these other unclean animals over here in human form. And the phrase eugenics and the eugenics movement goes back to the United States in the 1930s. As we despise Hitler for some of what he was doing with his countrymen and this whole race hygiene thing, but he got his inspiration from the United States of America. And
I was going to say Edwin Black has written a couple of books on that, IBM and the Holocaust, and another one called War Against the Weak, Eugenics and America's Campaign to Create a Master Race, you know, and where he details the actual American roots of Nazi eugenics. So
we had forced abortions, we had forced sterilizations of certain individuals, and it was all done because of this idea that we couldn't burden future generations with inferior genes. And of course, what was an inferior gene was rather arbitrarily decided upon by the self-appointed rulers of mankind's hereditary future.
Right.
And at following World War II and the Nazi image, the eugenics movement went underground, and unfortunately now it is starting to reemerge. I understand that the world is overpopulated and always will be because sex is a lot more fun than dying. But this, I get really upset when a group of people says it is up to us to decide who should live and procreate and who should die and get out of the way of the rest of us. I've got a real problem with that.
Right. Well, just I know I could talk for, you know, quite a long time about why I think that that's a myth, the idea of world population. But all I can say is that in the interest of time, I would just refer your listeners to that thread, because in addition to that excerpt from the Gore Vidal interview, I also post a lot of other articles detailing world population. And I also address that argument and why I think it's I think the real problem is the monetary system. And if you read
it's getting rid of the useless eaters.
Right. Well, the one by John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, is actually the more acute poverty you have, the more you tend to have population explosions. So these elites who whine about population explosions are actually causing them themselves by engineering all this acute poverty. So
yeah, that's absolutely right. All right, Todd, we got to let you go here, and we're going to take a break for some commercials and news here. Kevin, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait till after the news, so stay on the phone, and we will be back after these words from our sponsors and a news break. Until then, aloha, America. Stay tuned.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. Hour number two. Lots of stuff to talk about. We've already got callers waiting on the line, so we're going to go to Kevin in Seattle. Aloha, Kevin. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this
morning?
Hey,
how's it going?
It's going fine.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a big fan of yours, a long-time listener and visitor of your website and everything. But I just had a question, just mostly out of curiosity. I was wondering where you stand on UFOs. I don't hear you talk about it much, and I'm not talking about abduction. Maybe so. I'm not talking about abductions or anything like that. I'm talking about just other life and the possibility.
Let me basically say where I'm going with this one. I mean, I'm one of those people who's convinced that we are going to find life forms throughout the universe. Okay. That being said, I am absolutely convinced that we have not been visited by any alien civilizations at any time in our history. The evidence for such a visit would be far more unequivocal than the things that, like, Eric von Daniken comes up with and whatnot. Part of this idea that certain things had to be done by aliens in the past is simply because we've forgotten how ordinary mere mortals did it, and we tend to have this sort of cultural snobbery or temporal snobbery where we see ourselves as the pinnacle of civilization, and in many ways we are, but we tend to dismiss and underrate and not even really pay attention to the marvelous things that ancient people could do, like inventing beer, for example. So they had some pretty cool things going on back then. The reality is, and with all due deference to Star Trek and all the rest of that, I am asking myself that if it were possible to break the light speed barrier, we would have had alien civilizations would have visited us long before now. And they probably would have treated us pretty much the way Columbus treated the North American native indigenous peoples. They would have come in, exploited us for labor, or you said, please make these cool little earthing crafts that we can buy cheaply and sell very expensively in our gift shops back on the planet Krang. So the fact that that has not happened, I know we like to sort of have this idea that most aliens arriving here would be benevolent, sort of an international peace corps. But that our own history argues against it. It's very expensive to travel the universe. And they're going to want to profit back on that, if at all possible. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that there are two general categories of stars and stellar systems. There's what's called Population 2 and Population 1, and they were named before the relationship between the two is understood. Population 1 are stars like our sun with a lot of metals, a lot of metal content in the star, in the planets, and the elements that are necessary for life as we know it. And I emphasize that phrase, as we know it, because who knows what else could be all out there. Then there are the Population 2 stars, which are pure hydrogen and helium ices, and there's not much else there. And oddly enough, in our sector of the Milky Way, we're surrounded mostly by Population 2 stars. We're one of the only Population 1 stars around. So at least for this part of the galaxy, we are the oldest and wisest civilization to be found. Now, as far as the other parts of the galaxy, you know, it's anybody's guess. It's a long way to find other civilizations. I think that if we start listening for, you know, if we keep on building more sensitive radio receivers, eventually we're going to pick up the technological fall off from other planets and civilizations. But even on our own planet, our actual radio emissions leaking into space are in decline because we're going more and more to cable and optical, and we're not quite as wasteful with radio waves as we were 60, 50 years ago. So,
What about the sightings? Do you figure those are mostly either just completely made up, or do you think they're Earth-made objects that are being mistaken for UFOs?
Well, I remember one time when I was a kid living in West Covina, California, and there was a big UFO thing because there was this bright glowing object that was just flying slowly above the San Gabriel Mountains. And having built an astronomical telescope, I was able to go out and see that it was just a lost weather balloon. We know that during the 60s and 70s, the government encouraged Hollywood to produce TV shows about UFOs and flying saucers because these were the times when these new aircraft like the SR-71 and the F-117 were being developed. And the idea was that if they could convince Americans there are flying saucers and UFOs and aliens out there, and they saw several billion dollars of the taxpayer money whip past overhead, they'd start saying, "I've seen a UFO, I've seen a UFO," and people would ignore them. As opposed to somebody comes in and says, "I just saw this incredible hot new aircraft, and it looks just so wonderful." And then people say, let's go find out what that's all about. So,
what about the ones like the Phoenix Lights, or there was another one that was very similar to that over rural Chicago or just outside of Chicago?
That's
maybe
military testing. Military testing.
Like they say, it's like several hundred yards long or something like that.
Well, all they saw were the lights, and what they saw were military aircraft, helicopters in this case, flying in a V formation, which is a very common, they call it echelon. It's a formation flight, and imagination just said, "Oh, I'm seeing one huge gigantic object," instead of five or seven military helicopters flying in formation. So,
do you think so?
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced of it because I remember seeing back during the days of the Aurora quakes, and they were trying to say, "Oh, it's UFOs and space." They were putting these incredibly brilliant lights on military aircraft. It was a device to fool and spoof infrared guided missiles. And if you look carefully on modern helicopters today, up under the main rotor, you'll see that what looks like a little tiny sort of a greenhouse contraption. That's the light. And it's incredibly brilliant, and it is there. It is an anti-missile defense system. So, you know, I'm sorry. I know it's fun to speculate about, and I personally make a living off of science fiction movies that show this kind of stuff. But I think if aliens really were going to come here for a visit, they're not just going to grab some logger or truck driver out in the middle of nowhere to do weird sexual experiments on him and then not leave any other evidence of their being here.
I think the abduction angle, I think, is categorically a different animal.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, people's imaginations get carried away with them. And if you are able to pull off a really good hoax, there's a lot of money to be made in that. But I remember back in the 1980s, there was this alien autopsy film that was running all over, and everybody saying, "Oh, this is it. This is proof of aliens." And it was such an obvious fraud. For one thing,
the old grainy, like supposedly the Roswell.
Yeah, that one. That one. And that's such an obvious fraud. It's such a fake. It's such an obvious fake. Hey, trust me, I know fake. That's what I do. My day job.
Even the Foo Fighters and all those things, like even the... All the different...
Well, the Foo Fighters, I mean, I heard the word the Foo Fighters in connection with some experimental Japanese... those were the Foo Bombers. Okay. You know something, when you're up there at 20, 30,000 feet and your oxygen mask isn't working correctly, you're going to see a lot of weird stuff. In fact, it's interesting, now that you mention it, I hadn't thought of this before, but if you read the descriptions of the people who summit Everest and K2 and these other very high mountains, and they're up in the death zone, and even though they've got oxygen, they're not getting enough oxygen, and they describe being accompanied up the mountain by these very brilliant lights, and boy, it sounds to me like that's the same thing that was being described about the Foo Fighters. And so I think it's a symptom of...
The description seems so clear, though, you know, I guess... I can only go on.
Okay, well, we agree to disagree on this one, Kevin. Like I said, I'm sure there's life out there. I don't think they're interested in us. I'll tell you the place we should be looking, though, is not radio waves, but gravity waves, because gravity waves obviously propagate faster than the speed of light, or a black hole would swallow its own gravity field. So, you know, in fact, I have a $20 bet. Years ago, I worked on this show called The Astronomers for PBS, and I have a $20 bet outstanding with the show's science advisor that when they got to finally detecting gravity waves with these LIGO experiments, that they were going to find they're being used for communication among far-flung interstellar civilizations. But haven't won the money yet, haven't lost it either. We've got to let you go. We're running out of time here, and the phone lines are piling up here. We're going to switch to Betty in Wisconsin. Aloha, Betty. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? We're almost out of time here. We're probably going to have to take you into the next segment.
Okay. Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. There it is, the end of the segment. Betty, stand by, and we'll be right back here. Okay. This is the What Really Happened radio show. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got callers on the line. Before we go back to them, though, Brother Solomon, I saw your call come in. We were going to go right to you immediately here at the end of the break, and sorry that you had to hang up. If you are still listening, please email me. We're going to work out a way for you to be able to call the show without having to pay for it in the future. But you have to email me so that I have your email address on that. All right, moving right along, we're going to go back to Betty in Wisconsin. Aloha, Betty. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just enjoy listening to your show. Sometimes when I'm so depressed about things happening, and then you got such funny things to say, it just makes my day. I really mean it. That one story about that couple in Germany, I couldn't believe it. I laughed myself.
That was a funny one. Well, you know, it can get very depressing and daunting, and so every once in a while I try and keep things a little bit up and light and go off into some other areas and stuff, because otherwise, you know, there are days I get depressed just doing the show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, all the statistics, like this topic you were talking about before with a couple callers about the population. I was just reading this book. I don't know if I could say his name, but his author is Adolf Epperson.
Yes.
And he brought it down, the population, down to math, simple math. He said, when he wrote this book, he said Oregon, 95,600 square miles, could inhabit all 4 billion at the time this book was written. All 4 billion inhabitants could fit on a plot 50 by 53, and smaller than an average, you know, city lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the planet would be empty. So the other two.
Well, that's a little misleading, because unfortunately, yeah, you can fit the entire 4 billion population of the planet. You can crowd them into like a single county and some like down in Texas, but that doesn't mean they're going to stay alive for very long, because each live human being needs a certain amount of Earth's space to be creating oxygen for them, to be creating food for them, to recycle their waste. So it's a little. You know, it's not quite as cut and dried as saying there's plenty of room for the population of Earth, because it is not just how much room we're physically taking up. It is the resources that we need to live on. And I know there are these self-appointed rulers of the planet who see us as a liability to nature. And this is why they're trying to talk about, you know, oh, this planet would be just so wonderful without all those icky-poo humans around there. And one of the last books that Tom Clancy wrote, as he kind of wandered off the techno thriller and got into Rainbow Six and all this other very heavily propagandistic stuff, he did one about this. It was the book that followed Executive Action, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was about this self-appointed, very rich elitist society that was going to kill off 99% of the world's population so that they would inherit this beautiful, natural, bountiful earth that would be theirs and theirs alone for the rest of time. And it was an interesting book in that the technology to accomplish that actually does exist. And unfortunately, the mindset to do it, also sadly exists. And we see that, you know, with a lot of these people who claim to be in love with the planet, and yet their hatred for their fellow human beings is just palpable. And, you know, these are the kind of people who think...
The dualness of loving humans are loving the planet, but not humans, right?
and we're part of nature. This computer I'm working on is part of nature because I am part of nature. And yet these enviro wackos, excuse me, let me finish this thought here. These are people who think that a dam built by man for man's purposes is a terrible affront to nature, but a dam built by beavers for beavers' purposes is perfectly okay, even though a beaver dam actually causes more environmental damage over time per volume of water blocked than any human dam will do. And the same thing with all these condos are a blight on the land, but yet termites build termite mounds for the same purpose, to provide mass housing, and yet that's considered part of nature and wonderful and cool, and they make documentaries about it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I remember you saying that on one of your other shows. I thought that was a good...
Okay. Betty, I hate to cut you off, but we've got Solomon back on the line from Brazil, and he has to pay for these phone calls. So if you don't mind, I'm going to let you go here, and we're going to switch over to Solomon. Brother Solomon, welcome back to the show. Thank you for calling back in.
Saraba.
How's it going?
Saraba, meu irmão Ribeiro, como vai? I'm sorry. Let me reset my RPM.
I was going to say, listen, Rivero's a Sephardic name. I don't actually speak Spanish. I'm sorry.
Let me reset my timing. you know that the radio has a rhythm, and that rhythm reflects how much passion one puts in communicating with other human beings. And you put a lot of passion, and I'm very happy for that, and I'm very happy to hear that you put passion. And you have a caller, and this is an angry caller, and your website doesn't suck.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Brother Rivero, this caller is still angry. And you know why? Because we get sidetracked so easily with subjects and news that we still don't realize that the machine works because of our crimes against humanity. No matter where do they come, to perpetrate crimes with total impunity, and we need to remember that it's necessary uniform, badges, weapons against a flock of terrified mammals. We are the terrified mammals.
Yes.
We don't have the courage to defeat our conflict of interest with our own masters. We still worship the host of armies, and we believe that because they bring food to our tables, we don't care where that food is coming from.
Yes, that's absolutely true. In fact, I there was this very weird ad that I put up there a while back getting back to this environmental wacko kind of situation, where they were saying, oh, you hunters, you shouldn't kill animals in the woods. You should go to the supermarket and get your meat there where no animals are harmed. And it was like, okay, and this person is being allowed to operate heavy machinery.
Right.
So,
well, you know what, Brother Rivero, I'm sorry if I interrupt you. It seems like if we keep repeating, I'm not a crook. We will believe that, but we still believe that. I still believe the repetition works. If it works so well for these criminals, based in lies, that repetition should really work much better for us using truth.
Mm-hmm.
At least as far as we know the truth. Remember that crime, even more, this state terrorist crime, does not give a receipt. So if you are expecting that crime, this kind of crime, will give you a receipt, and with that receipt, you can claim in front of the media that these individuals are criminal, you are just fooling yourself. We have to really dig, investigate like you do, connect dots, and be bold. Force them to expose themselves. We need to let them expose themselves. As an example, dear Brother Rivero, if I don't take a lot of your time, I'm trying to do time in radio. The other day, this destruction is coming from a potential traffic organs in New Jersey rabies, right? Rabbis.
Yes.
Well, rabbis with rabies. Well, it's a signal to the Israeli government, who probably is blackmailing us with the truth about September 11 and our total involvement there. And now we can also design another trail of crimes directly to the office and cabinet of the Israeli government.
That's an interesting theory there. And Solomon, unfortunately, we just ran out of time. I'm going to let you go because I know you're paying for this call. Please email me. We're working out a means for you to be able to call the show without having to pay for it, okay? So, Solomon, thank you very much. We're going to let you go here. When we come back, we got lots more stuff to talk about. Phone lines are open, 800-259-9231. No more UFO callers. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. My, the time is flying. Thanks to everybody who called in. It always makes it a more fun show for me when people are on the line here. But I do want to get back and cover a couple of stories. And the two that are really uppermost in my mind right now is the what's now being called the Kosher Nostra scandal up in New Jersey. And the FEMA exercises next week. And as we were mentioning earlier in the show, my concern about these FEMA exercises that are bringing in all these foreign troops from other countries, Australia, Canada, all these other places, and they're putting them on the streets of America, and they're running all of these martial law exercises. And they're saying, it's for anti-terror. No, it isn't. It's got nothing to do with terrorism. Do you think a bunch of foreign troops on the streets of the United States of America would have stopped 9/11, especially considering it was an inside job? Terrorists grab airplanes and they grab ships and they do things like that, and they fly off to Uganda and, you know, where they set the stage for a dramatic public relations victory by the Israeli forces who set it up all for themselves in the first place. Okay? So troops on the streets of America are not there to scare the terrorists or defeat the terrorists or control the terrorists in any way, shape, or form. When you have troops in the streets of America in multiple cities across the country, it is the U.S. government sending a message that they are afraid. They understand that they have taxed and lied and cheated and abused the American people past the point of tolerance. Go back to your Declaration of Independence. People, history has shown people are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations evincing a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, and I know I'm not quoting it correctly because it's been a while since I had to prove I memorized the Declaration. But basically, we're at the breaking point, and I don't like it. I don't like violence. I don't want to see kids bleeding to death in the streets of America, but we seem to be headed in that direction. So what this FEMA exercise is, it's got nothing to do with terrorism. They're putting troops on the streets of America, and they're sending a message saying, do not complain when we raise your taxes. Do not complain when we lie you into another war in Iran. Do not complain when we take more of your money to give to Israel. Do not complain when we give Israel more weapons and stuff. That is not your job to complain. Your job is to work and pay taxes and breed soldiers, and that's all you're supposed to do. And if you dare do anything else, we will bring in these foreign troops who will not hesitate to kill you when we tell them to do so. Because for a long time, it's been realized that the U.S. government's big problem in quelling a popular uprising among the American people was that U.S. soldiers were very reluctant to kill their own countrymen. Well, they've solved that problem. They've got the Australians coming in here. They've got Canadians coming in here. They've got Mexicans coming in here who will not hesitate to shoot those nasty old imperial American citizens and loot them for their iPods. So that's what this is all about. This is the U.S. government attempting to scare the American people back into submission, back into slavery, back into serfdom. That's what's going on here. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, this was the same mistake Charles I made. And look how it ended up for him. And so when you see those soldiers on the streets of the United States, they're not there to deal with terrorists. They're there to deal with you uppity Americans who still believe in all that silliness about a right to free speech and a right to petition the government for redresses and a right to keep your own money and decide how you're going to spend it. Barack Obama and his administration are continuing a long-standing American policy of turning this into a fascist economy where profits are kept private and losses are socialized. And how dare you stand up and say that that's not what you want your taxes spent on? And so that's what this week-long exercise is all about, is proving to the American people that the U.S. government will not stand for the American people daring to decide the future of their own country. And that's what this is all about. The U.S. government is hoping that you look at all these soldiers and you'll be afraid. They're hoping that seeing all these foreign troops on the streets of America with all this military hardware is going to have a chilling effect on the American people. I don't know about you, it's angering me. It's pissing me off. It's getting exactly the opposite response that the planners hoped for it. But then these were the same clueless idiots who thought we could win in Afghanistan, so I guess I'm not too surprised they've blown it this badly as well. So that's what this exercise is all about. All right, turning back to New Jersey, because a lot of people are writing in about this, and the story is being downplayed in the American corporate media, but it is exploding in the foreign press. It's exploding in the alternative media. It's exploding here on the blogosphere. It is a huge scandal. We are talking a corruption scandal that is hitting all levels of the state government of New Jersey, and everyone says, that's New Jersey. Okay. Well, you know something? It's one thing to have a completely corrupt government when the people living in subservience, servitude, slavery to that government, they're not having to look at it. But in this case, it is being rubbed in the face of the people of New Jersey. I think they're going to have to react. Their own self-image and their own honor is going to require that they react to this scandal. Okay? Now, we've got this other situation with the money laundering ring that was being run by these rabbis and Israel's assets. They're trying to shout that one down and literally coming out saying, well, it's the FBI's fault. It's an anti-Semitic plot, and they're just trying to cover for these. These are venerable rabbis. These are holy men. They would never do anything like that. Of course holy men do things like that. Look at the pedophilia scandal over in the Catholic Church here. You know, I'm going to be a non-denominational basher here. I mean, I think all organized religion is a con game, and so we should not be surprised when we find child molesters in the Catholic Church or money launderers in the Jewish faith. By its very nature, it is a swindle that promises you that you will somehow escape death if you just do as you're told and give us a piece of the action for your entire life. I mean, that is the coinage of pretty much every religion that's out there right now. Do as we say, give us a piece of the action, and we'll fix it so you never really have to die. This goes all the way back to ancient Egypt, when Pharaoh promised that if you would haul that there rock over up to the top of that there pyramid, we're going to fix it so you don't really die. And it worked. They got the pyramids built. Isn't that amazing? And, of course, it's such a wonderful swindle, because it's not like you have somebody come back from being dead for any significant amount of time. And they come back and say, you know, it wasn't anything at all like that. You know, there wasn't, you know, Thor and Zeus and the rest of them up there welcoming me. There were no harps and wings and 47 raisins or whatever it is that they're promising us. So it's a perfect scam. Nobody ever comes back and says, I didn't get what you promised me for that lifetime of servitude and obedience and tithing. So, of course, yeah, you're going to find this kind of thing going on. It's endemic to the industry of religion. So, now I want to get onto this organ trafficking situation. I had somebody actually write in and say, you don't want to know where those kidneys are coming from. Yeah, I do. I think that's the core issue here. We know that people are vanishing from the streets of America, and not just homeless. I mean, you see the milk cartons all the time. People are just disappearing. And nobody knows where they go. Wayne Madsen a couple of days ago reported homeless people are vanishing from the major metropolitan areas of the United States. Nobody knows where they're going. The social workers are saying, well, we hope they found a better situation. We hope things worked out. But, one of the social workers right in Washington, D.C. said they could easily be victims of the black market organ trade. Now, this guy that they arrested as part of this money laundering ring, he's been trafficking organs for 10 years. It's not just a one-time only for just one kidney. He's been doing it for 10 years. Where are these kidneys coming from? We have documented evidence that Palestinians that are killed by the IDF, their bodies are returned to their families. They've had organs removed. So that's one possible source for these organs. the homeless may be another source. But here's the bottom line. Did you ever see a movie called Soylent Green starring Charlton Heston? And at the end of the movie, he's out there screaming, Soylent Green is made out of people, where they're harvesting the poor people to make food for the rich people. This is exactly the same thing at the moral level. The rich are buying and chopping up the poor to survive. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha,
America. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
Oh, man, I got to stop doing that. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Robert in Oklahoma. Aloha, Robert. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
I just wanted to say that, I pay my taxes like everybody else in this United States, and I can't see how the economy just can keep falling apart. They keep raising these taxes. Well, what about these rich people? You know, people that are millionaires. Why all these poor people out here are getting, screwed, per se. These rich people are just laying back in their big old homes, not having to pay, a high price of taxes because they're making all this money. I think that, if to really knock down a rich person, you've got to make them poor.
Okay, hang on. I don't want to get into this idea of rich versus poor because that is also a false dichotomy. The fact is, in my view, we are all taxed too much, rich and poor alike. And the rich are always going to use their money to influence the laws in their favor. But I don't want to get into this idea of turning the rich and poor together because this is the government itself turning us against each other. And they've been doing it throughout all our history. Going back to the 1960s, it was the war people against the peace people, the rich against the poor, the young against the old, men against women all during the 1990s. The government was propping up the feminist movement and turning it from equal rights into male bash and crying rape and screaming and yelling. And this is how the government keeps us thrashing amongst ourselves instead of focusing on the problem, which is the government itself and its mismanagement of our economy and the Federal Reserve, which by design impoverishes the poor people to give money to the wealthy. So that's what we need to focus on, and I don't want to get into rich versus poor, okay? Okay, Robert, we're going to let you go. We got other callers on the line. Robert, thank you very much for the phone call. Switch to John in Ohio. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Quickly, though, I do think it's a matter of class, and the Federal Reserve and these Wall Street bankers do represent the ultra rich, and the class issue is inseparable from that. But I did want to mention how these foreign troops in this country correspond to the U.S. troops around the world in these bases in places like Honduras, where we've overthrown this government, and it's a return to the support for these guerrilla military dictatorships that the CIA installed around the country up through the 90s until they figured they could use so-called civilian puppet governments with a military, U.S. military behind them and School of the American, School of the Assassins types behind them with an implied gun to their head to do the accomplish the same stoogery for the U.S. Transnational corporations, the IMF, and the rest of it.
Nothing new in that. They've been doing it all the way back to when Batista was in charge of Cuba. Same thing.
Absolutely. Now I think there's this idea that somehow they were going to get away with having, for instance, this President Zelaya, who was from the elite class, but then began to realize that he had to give some of the social programs and reforms to the poor, the majority poor in that country, and try to break out of this IMF, World Bank, U.S. Wall Street control and ally with an alternative ELBA with Venezuela and these other countries that are helping the poor. And he was overthrown. And now this, if you read on globalresearch.ca, globalresearch.ca, some of the CA, the articles by Eva Gollinger, the present government of Hillary Clinton and Obama are up to their ears in this, but they're much more slick in pretending that somehow this is somehow independent of them, when in fact the that little stooge military there that supports death squads in Honduras throughout its tutelage by the United States is totally in consultation daily with the U.S. Base there.
Well, I don't think they're anywhere near as slick as they like to pretend. I mean, we saw the U.S. hand between the failed coup d'etat in Iran. We're still not sure how the situation in Honduras is going to end. But we're aware that this is U.S. covert activity. It's a return to the 1950s and the heyday of when we were overthrowing governments left and right to put in friendly, powers. And, you know, we're running up against the possibility. You know, what's going on is the military-industrial complex misses the days of the Soviet Union. They're trying to recreate the world as it was at the height of the Cold War, the better to suck more money out of us. But the problem is we, the American people, now see it. We know what the scam is all about. It's a different world, and trying to go back and recreate the world that was, ultimately, I don't think it's going to work. And I think, ultimately, the U.S. government is simply going to collapse the way the USSR did. It's overextended. It's broke. It doesn't have any manufacturing base to support it. It doesn't have the trust of the American people. Even Barack Obama admits that right now. This show of force in the streets of the country next week is only going to further alienate the population.
Well, it's true, but the media in this country still, brainwashes a significant segment of the population. And
it's a minority. It's a minority, according to the latest polls.
That's true, but some of the hypocrisy in the media about Iran, where Ahmadinejad did win the election, according to some of the top U.S. pollsters who took the poll 2 weeks before the election and said he was going to win even bigger than what the government claimed.
Yeah, he had a 2-to-1 margin.
Right, and the situation in Honduras, where they're running a total domination of the entire society and shooting down demonstrators, killing people. The media says nothing about this, tries to whitewash the idea of kidnapping the elected president, who did not want to extend his term of office. He just wanted to have a poll as to whether they would have a referendum later for somebody else to have that possibility, because the Supreme Court and the Congress is totally dominated by these U.S. transnational corporations.
Well, I think we're starting to see the wane of that again because of public awareness. John, we got to let you go. We got one more caller. We're almost out of time on today's show. So we're going to let you go. John, thank you very much for the phone call. Janet, aloha, Janet. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to call and send you love on what's our first year anniversary.
Okay, we better explain to the listeners what you mean by that, because my wife listens to this show, and she might shoot me as I come home.
This is member L. Villas.
I know that's what you're talking about. You've been a member at whatreallyhappened.com for 1 year, and it was just a year ago. We put up, after months of work, we got the new site up and running, and it's had a few glitches and birth pains and everything, but we're looking forward to growing into the future with the website, and thank you for the membership, and thank you for your support, and thank you very much for the phone call. And Janet, we're going to let you go because I got one more story I really want to get to today before the end of the show. Actually two, but one of them only takes a mention. On the front page of whatreallyhappened.com, there is an article entitled Fraudsters Have You in Their Sights with 5 New Scams. Please take a moment to read this one, because as the economy tightens up, people who are unable to make a living legally start turning to scams and fraud, and especially as we're seeing around us. We're being a nation of scammers and fraudsters. We don't make anything anymore. Global warming is a scam to soak you for taxes. The war on terror is a scam to soak you for taxes. It's just on and on. And the frauds are getting more sophisticated. You need to be aware of some of these newest ones that are coming around, because there's a lot of people out there, and they're very slick operators. They're just trying to find a way to steal your money from you. Don't let them do it. So read that article. The other story I wanted to talk about, there is an exhibition of the Dead Sea Scrolls up in Canada right now, and it's a touring exhibit from the Israeli Antiquities Authority, and it's going to be touring around the world. And it's causing a little bit of a stir, because if you look at the history of the Dead Sea Scrolls, they were found in Palestine. And the Palestinians believe, with merit, that the Dead Sea Scrolls are their cultural history. because they were written by the Palestinian forebears. They were found in Palestine when Israel basically conquered East Jerusalem during the 1967 war. They said, oh, these are now ours. And they took them out of the museum where they were being displayed in Palestine and moved them over to an Israeli museum, and ever since then have taken the attitude that the Dead Sea Scrolls are Israel's cultural heritage. And so the Palestinians are now demanding that Canada seize the Dead Sea Scrolls, because under the UNESCO rules, there is a very valid question about to whom they really do belong. That's it for our show. We'll be back Monday at 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network. So until then, have a good weekend. Stay safe, be well, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, eat a lot of cinnamon, and share what you know with your friends. Call your local AM and FM stations, tell them to put us on the air, and aloha, America.